Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Not bad.
Not bad. Work is picking up.
slowly, slow and steady.
Yeah. All right. Now, everywhere it's very slow. Construction has started, but then there's the same problem, labor problem.
Yeah.
So, guys, if anybody has any questions, just feel free to shoot in the comment section. In the meanwhile, I'm going to start from the very beginning. 10 years of studio osmosis. How has your journey been over the decade, and how were the beginning years of your practice like?
I think we're losing you a little bit itself. I don't know if it's just me or others also.
Please let us know if you can hear me, hear both of us, see and hear both of us. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, now I can.
Yeah. So I was asking about your journey over the decade. How were the beginning years of your practice?
Wow. It's so actually 2020, that is this year, actually has been 10 years for us for Studio Osmosis. And for those who don't know, it's a practice that Samir and I started together 10 years ago. But we had sort of conceptualized, the firm, the name, all of that, while we were in the US about 5 years before that. So it's been a long time that we were sort of thinking that we need to do this on our own. We worked abroad for about 6 years, 5 years. We did our master's there. So I think all that experience and the fact that, we wanted to come back home and start our own practice. I think all of that combined, when we came back, we decided that, let's go all out and sort of start Studio Osmosis. We did work here for a little while post that, and we soon enough, started the journey, and it's been amazing, so to say. I mean, we've done in all these 10 years, we've done all kinds of projects, whether it's hospitality, commercial, residential, office, healthcare. In fact, healthcare was something that I had studied abroad for my master's specialty, and when we got the first healthcare project here about maybe 7 8 years ago, we were really excited that, you're getting to apply whatever you've studied, and the healthcare that was happening here was kind of very different. So I think that journey has been beautiful in the entire 10 years, and we're still a small studio practice. We take all scales of work, whether it is big, small. So the scale really doesn't matter to us. It's got to be an interesting project, an interesting client that can keep challenging us.
Yeah. So since you have a versatile practice and you're talking about scale of the project, when you're handling different scales at one time, does it kind of, how do you manage all that together?
I think as architects and interior designers, now we realize that scale is really just one thing, like design and what the project is, and then sort of going back from a large to a small one actually puts you in perspective. Every time you change the genre or the scale, you actually get back into perspective. I mean, even literally jumping from an architecture project to a small interior project, you're completely switching your entire scale and proportion. But imagine when you're doing that little sketch on that A4 size piece of paper, whether it is the elevation of a building or it is a small detail that you're talking about, it all comes down to sort of that particular detail, the entire holistic aspect, what the client really wants from this. So, I don't think the aspects change, whether it is a small scale project or a big scale project. You're always going to look at the bigger picture. You're always going to look at the user. You're always going to ask the questions, what, why, who, and then sort of continue that process in the entire project. So I think once you sort of get your system and your process, then the scale can keep transcending, the genre can keep transcending. In fact, it keeps bringing interesting challenges, because it might get boring sometimes to keep doing, even for the team. Like even for our team, sometimes we ask, oh, you've been working on a restaurant for a long time, so are you interested in working on a, residential, maybe, club it with one residence or club it with something that's a long-term project versus a very quick, short, high-pressure project. So I think that keeps you going.
Right. Right. So tell me about your design style. How do you blend different spaces together and how do you connect the inside out?
I like this whole question about design style, or whenever somebody asks you what's the design style or what's your design style. And I think over the years, we've evolved a lot. And we look back at our work 10 years ago, we look at our work that we've been doing recently, and what you realize is that the same thing, the process kept remaining the same, but you kept evolving yourself, you kept understanding materials better, you keep understanding details better, you keep integrating the whole project much better, as the years go by, as your experience increases. So when it comes to inside out, I think the whole advantage of being an architect here really helps. So when an architect is designing interiors, by default, you will never think only about interiors. You are always going to start thinking about, you go outside the box, you start thinking. You start outside, you start saying that what is this space going to be conceived at from outside, and then you start stepping in from a larger to a smaller scale, or go back from the smaller scale to a much larger scale. So you do kind of get used to looking inside out as well as outside in. So it's very, very important to merge, like when you're talking about projects that have the opportunity of having an outdoor space, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a bungalow, whether it's a building, or you're talking about residential spaces which have these indoor outdoor spaces that keep connecting, or for that matter today even commercial spaces, I think they've realized the importance of how access to nature or greenery is so important even when you're working, because that's where you spend most of your time, not even in your house or your bedroom. You're going back to sleep, but you're actually spending literally 10 hours in your workspace.
The workspace.
So it becomes really important to take in whatever possible natural views, the nature, the lighting, the ventilation into consideration. Not every project needs to be fully air conditioned all the time. So you need to look at that aspect. How are you going to sort of say that, let me shut down the air conditioning here, but try to make use of, the natural resources that I'm getting. How do you also visually give that calmness to people, the access to nature? The moment you're able to give a physical access and also just a visual access wherever your sight can get you, I think it changes the entire the entire project. Actually, the entire way you're looking at the space, it always reminds me of the Philip Johnson's glass house. That's one of my most favorite, projects, and we had the opportunity of visiting it when we were there. And it keeps you're dumbfounded. When you see that space, you actually realize that there are no interiors. It is actually an outside space from inside. It's also an outside space from outside. So I think that that aspect is really important as to how you tackle that merge of inside to outside and back in. I think the spaces are really the way architects are designing spaces, or the way even interior designers are collaborating, they are sort of in the process. Even if you have two separate consultants, they're in the process right from the beginning, and I think that's what really makes all the difference. You don't bring in an interior designer after the architecture or the project is over and say, here, take this space and now design this, the interiors for this space. It's not going to work. So I think that's very important if you have two different people working on this project. And we've done those kind of projects too, where you have a different architect and a different interior designer on the project. So I think it becomes very important to then marry the two very well. In fact, even the landscape designer, even the entire landscape area, it's very important to merge all of that right from the beginning.
Absolutely. So I'm here talking about the lobby design for residential complex, the way that you have kind of used material, lighting, landscape to create such a majestic aura. So what is the process behind creating such beautiful entrances? What is the thought process behind conceptualizing that entire space?
So whenever we look at architecture, like a person is perceiving the facade from outside. And then when you enter a building or a space or a residential lobby or whatever it is, you start to sort of understand the story of that building. So the first space that you're really entering into any space, you know, whether it's a small restaurant, a mall, a residential or a commercial complex, the storytelling starts right at the entrance. So what do you really want the person, the user to perceive starts at the entrance, whether you want this person to, you know, you want to give him this entire boom, you know, everything's happening right at the entrance. And it's like this really bold statement that I want to make. That's your entrance, as opposed to maybe you have this really beautiful storytelling way of a suspense that you're trying to create, where you know you're not giving them everything at the first visual. You're actually giving them a process of discovering the space slowly, and that's another beautiful way of doing, you know, entrances or the entire storytelling aspect. So for us, I feel that that whole entrance or lobbies or anything that you're sort of, you know, entering the architecture is really your first step of storytelling. And you have to understand from the client that what's his vision about the storytelling. You know, does he want to sort of make the statement? Is he trying to be, you know, firm, bold, subtle? Is he trying to sort of create an experience that is, you know, more moody and sort of more soft lit? So I think those, once you get that understanding, and then you are able to design that space much better.
Okay, so tell us about the Mill House in Ahmedabad. What went behind creating the perfect rustic and bold look and blending the two together?
Okay, so Mill House is basically a restaurant that we did, you know, in Ahmedabad, and it's actually in a mall there. So the whole driving factor for most of our projects really comes again, like, you know, you are story listening, you're then storyboarding, and then you're storytelling. So for us, for this project, it was very important to sort of have a lot of meetings with a client who's basically, it was a chef-driven restaurant. So his entire passion into the restaurant could be seen, where it was all about the fresh ingredients. The first outlet of that, you know, the restaurant Mill House was going to start in Ahmedabad. Ahmedabad has a very strong a culture, a tradition, architecture style that you're talking about, and he was also trying to touch the entire modern cuisine, but with this very fresh ingredient palette. So we actually took the entire brand story, and then we turned it into our design and our story. Telling story to it actually gets combined. And so if you see the entire, you know, the materials, the palettes, the language is all about, you know, purity of the materials, keeping them simple, keeping very simple forms that are sort of taken in from the Ahmedabad architecture. So you're talking about the arches, the brick arches, you know, if you look at the Louis Kahn work there, or you know, anything that's, you know, the inspiration is really from the architecture, but in a very modern way, where the focus then comes down on the food and also the whole introduction of green or the plants, because you know it brings you back to your aroma of the food, or you know, the freshness of everything that they are trying to serve. And also what we did is, you know, we took art in a very contemporary form. So we took bandhani, we worked with artists who actually converted, you know, they took Gujarati fabrics, you know, the Gujarat bandhani fabric or the artwork, and then converted them into contemporary forms of art. So it was very interesting to sort of, you know, work through the entire process of this project.
I want to know more. Please share some experiences about this project.
Okay.
Anything that you'd like to share?
Ahmedabad being Ahmedabad, you know, they don't, you know, there's no alcohol in the stores. I mean, you know, the restaurants. And but the experience that Mill House wanted to give, or we wanted to give the people who came there, you know, the idea was also to bring in the younger crowd. You know, you could go there with your college friends, your dates, and stuff like that. So we actually created this entire concept of a bar. You know, even though they were not serving alcohol, we actually said that why not do this bar concept here? It could be your mocktail bar, it could be your juice bar. But the whole experience of coming there in an evening for a mocktail drink or a date still works, you know. So you're actually giving them the entire vibe without saying, oh, you're coming here for an alcohol, but you're actually coming there for the experience and the food together. Another interesting thing that we did is we actually took Mill House, we converted it into, you know, the Hindi script When it came to Pune, when it came to the second outlet in Pune, we actually did mail a house in and we printed them on the tiles at the outdoor entrance. And we took their Windmill X logo and we also got that sort of screen printed on some of the tiles. So this X was something that sort of continued in the outlet in, you know, one way or the other, sort of keeping that continuity, but still giving a different experience when the outlet changed to Pune or, you know, when it was in Ahmedabad. So it was quite interesting to kind of take that whole thing ahead.
Yeah. So do you have any tips for the audience to use lighting for that perfect look and feel in restaurants or such spaces?
See, you know, over the years and, you know, over our experience of so many years, then we realized that, you know, when our first few projects, we did some restaurants where some of the restaurants were probably overlit. And we realized that, you know, you don't need so much lighting. You actually need to focus on the mood lighting or what you're trying to sort of create, you know, in terms of lighting there. So lighting can actually make or break a space totally. You know, you have to think about the lighting of the space, whether it is your residential design, whether it is, you know, office or a restaurant. And especially for a restaurant or a hospitality design, your lighting has to be thought about right from the beginning. The way you actually have to design lighting is you have to think backward as to what kind of contrasts you're trying to create in the space. You know, not the fact that I want to lit each and every corner of the space. So that should not be your intent. Your intent should actually be, how do I create these contrasts? Should, you know, I be able to create these nooks and corners in this space, especially if it's a restaurant space, you know, and if it's a fine dine or if it's a bar or if it's a night place, how does it convert from this day to night ambiance, where in the day it is like a brightly lit space because, you know, if you have some outdoor light, but how do I sort of transition it from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. to sort of 10 p.m. and how do I get people slowly into the mood? So you realize that when you're in a restaurant, you know, your mood starts changing from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. You know, it's the music, it's the lighting, it's the vibe, and without you even realizing, you are actually in that zone, and it's only because you're doing it right. If I have a 10 p.m. brightly lit restaurant, believe me, you'll have people walking out of there. So it's very important to figure out what kind of crowd you're expecting, what the kind of, you know, sort of noise level, ambiance level that you're trying to create, and your lighting has to sort of play along with that. So you have to create layers of lighting. You're doing your ambient lighting, you're doing your focus or your mood lighting, and then you're doing like these special decorative lighting areas. And the same thing applies for residential too. So, you know, even when you're doing homes, see, a lot of people say, you know what, builder ne mujhe light de diya hai and I don't need any more lighting and it's already a ready-made house. But as you start discussing the client's lifestyle, you'll realize that, you know, they're having these quiet dinners. They're calling, you know, 10 to 15 people over for, like, you know, evening drinks. Or they have a puja, they have a puja in the house. Or, you know, they have to use the home for studying. So you're talking about, I think there was a phone call, so it got cut. So you're talking about many different functions in the same space, which means that you actually have to design the lighting for each of these functions. You have to choose the right light picture, you have to choose the right light levels, and the most important thing is control. You have to give lighting control to people that, you know, if I need to dim this, I can dim this. That already mentally sort of helps you into your entire well-being. You know, if I'm in a space where I'm working and I'm not able to control that light, that is going to continuously irritate me. So I think that control becomes a very important aspect, you know.
So when it comes to residential spaces, what are your favorite materials that you know, your go-to materials? TR, ye to mera favorite palette hai. Anything that you would like to suggest to budding architects who are just entering into the industry and they're kind of putting their hands on different material palettes?
So I want to say to all the budding designers or anybody out there, and I think we are still continuously learning, you know, after being 20 years in this profession, we are still continuously learning about the materials. Every day you're seeing actually new materials, or you're seeing old materials, traditional materials, but you're able to use them in interesting new ways. So I think that trying out new materials, trying out every kind of material, you know, and not saying I'm opposed to something before you've actually tried out becomes the most important aspect of, you know, materials. Like, I don't think you should have a preconceived notion that, you know, glass is not a good material or metal is not a good material. It's about how you're going to apply the material. It's about how you're going to use the material and what space it is being applied in. Like, you know, a wood can give me warmth, you know, concrete can give me this coolness, you know, brick can give me this rustic nature that I want. So I think every material comes with its innate sort of nature, innate structure, and an innate feeling that it gives you, it generates. And I think that, you know, I mean, metal used in large quantities can give you a very different feeling versus metal used in just putties or highlighters or the right details. So I think detailing of materials is very important. You know, we've tried out, like recently we've tried out things like resin, or we've tried out liquid metals in a lot of different ways. Like, we've made smaller furniture pieces out of them. We've used them in doors, or we've used them in art sculptures. So I think there is so much you can do with materials if you keep your mind open. And, you know, even if there is a budget that you're talking about, you can always use things in smaller quantities and still try it out. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a whole chunk of it.
Yeah. So I'm curious to ask you one question, which in fact I have been asked a lot of times, that if masters is a good option for people who are practicing, and since you have done masters in architecture from Texas and you specialize in healthcare, so I want to ask you the same question. How much value did that master's degree add to your practice now?
You know, I did my master's about 2 decades ago, and I think it was a very different time at that point of time. You know, the world was not that connected. We were still using paper maps to travel at that point of time. We were not, you know, we didn't have smartphones. You know, it was an entirely beautiful, different experience going to a different country, you know, you literally using, after a few years, using voice over IP to connect with your family back. It was a different experience. And I think I would never take that away. You know, those years have been, in fact, both for Sameer and me, they've been some of the best years of our life, whether it is learning, whether it is experience, whether it is, you know, understanding culture, tradition, understanding travel. So I think it is not just limited to education. There is so much you can learn where, you know, whatever, if it's master's, bachelor, anything that you're doing, there is so much that you can actually get out of it. Or just the experience of meeting people. Yeah, just the experience of meeting people from different cultures. I mean, even that is a whole experience in itself, which eventually becomes inspirations in your learning, you know. So, like, if I had to take it back, I would still go and do it the same way. You know, I would not change that. Having said that, I think the world has become a much smaller, a much connected place today. You know, I can sit here and learn courses from anywhere in the world. You know, I can travel for 2 months to Europe or to China or to Japan or to wherever and learn so much. So I think that, you know, now you have to sort of gauge it with the kind of, you know, the kind of learning that you're wanting to do, the kind of experience that you're sort of looking out for, and then take a call. But I don't think it is going to be one way or the other. I can get that same education, that same experience, you know, with a master's in India, or a master's anywhere in the world. So, you know, that doesn't change now. But I don't think your experiences go anywhere.
Yeah. We have a few questions from the audience who are live with us. How do you decide on a theme for a restaurant? How does footfall play a role in deciding the theme?
So it's very important, actually, a very interesting question, because whenever you're designing a restaurant, so again, you come back to the whole story listening aspect. You need to have a lot of meetings with your client initially. Sometimes you'll end up with a client who knows the brand. You know, they already know what they want from their brand. They know their cuisine. They know who's going to be coming to this restaurant. Those are obviously easier because they already know the kind of thing that they want, what is exactly going to happen in that restaurant. But you also have a lot of startup restaurateurs who come up, you know, okay, four friends decided I want to open a restaurant, but we really don't know exactly what this is going to be. So you as a designer actually literally become a part of that concept restaurant where you are helping them understand, you asking them these right questions. You know, who are you going to cater this to? Is it for the younger crowd? Is it for the, you know, is it for a mixed crowd? Is it a night place? Is it a day place? Is it in a mall where you already have people coming in, or is it in a place where somebody has to take an effort of driving because they have to plan, oh, let's go for a fine dine to this place and let's book a slot here. So these are very, very relevant questions, because based on these questions, your planning will be done, your zoning will be done, you will decide the number of covers of that space. You know, the planning for a restaurant is very, very important, and the planning just doesn't come ad hoc on an AutoCAD plan. It actually comes based on a lot of these questions. So you literally have to ask all these questions to the brand. What kind of food are they serving? You know, how much time does it take to cook this food? Is it going to be quick? Are they actually going to take a nice half an hour to serve you the food and give you that experience? It all changes the way you then design the restaurant. You're going to make comfortable seating then, you know, because you're not going to want people to get up faster. But, you know, as versus like a cafe kind of space or a bar, you don't want people sitting there too long. You actually, so your seats are not going to be, you know, you may have a few lounge seating, but you can't design everything that's comfortable because then they're not going to get up. So you actually have to think in terms of the entire operation of how the brand is going to work. And it's very important for the brand to know.
All right. Some important things one needs to look at while creating restaurants and bars. Some key factors.
So, like I mentioned, one is really, really, really understanding your client and your brand well. You know, that's the most important aspect. Planning. Planning is very, very, very important. So, you know, don't just consider it that I made three options and then I gave it to the client and the client liked one option. No. Your plan itself is really your design concept. It's going to actually tell you the entire visualization. It's going to tell you how you're going to create interest in the entire storytelling. Why does a person want to come back here? It's very important. You know, today I go and sit in one spot, but the next time I go there, I'm going to want to say, oh, you know, how about me wanting to take a place in that other corner? Because it's different, because it's got a different ambiance, you know. So that is a very important aspect. Third is what kind of food, cuisine that you're talking about. Services are a very important aspect of a restaurant. You know, how you're planning your circulation, your air conditioning, your lighting, your acoustics, your music. Like the noise levels are very, very important. Again, the noise levels can make or break a space. You know, if I don't do the right acoustics, if I don't do the right lighting, people are not going to want to come back. They are going to not remember this place. In fact, for today's places, you almost have to also create a good photo opportunity, because people love taking pictures as memories. So people are actually creating selfie walls or selfie corners, or, you know, some interesting factors that people sort of come back to. Or if I see a picture of a restaurant on social media, somebody should ask, you know, where is this place? You know, what's so unique about this? So you have to have this interest factor, but you parallelly also have to have the longevity. It can't die in 6 months. You know, your concept can't be like a thematic space where I'll like it for 6 months, but then I'm not going to want to go back after 6 months. So it has to have that feeling of wanting to go back. It has to have that comfort.
Yeah. All right. What all acoustic characteristics we need to design in a restaurant, and in what ways? Because noise level is high. So what materials do you suggest for that?
So a lot of materials you get now for actual acoustical treatment. What we also do is, if it is like a fine dine place, then we also recommend fabric paneling, you know, which can be maintained. Or you get cleanable acoustic materials, which are actually wipeable. So you get these kind of acoustic material that can be actually cleaned, wiped off, because a lot of restaurants don't want maintenance. So you get those, or you get these, you know, grooved panels that can be put into the ceiling. Like Anutone and many other brands have panels that can actually act as acoustic material. So creating the right layers and the right height and the levels also help you in the acoustics. So, you know, maybe I want the entire ceiling, but if I just create acoustic, you know, sort of lowering panels, which will also help me in my entire acoustics of the space. So you have to also consider whether they are going to play live music. Are they going to only play like soft music? So if you are actually going to play proper live music, you want to actually get a right acoustic consultant for that space. You know, you don't want to say that I'm just going to use these three, four elements and then do the acoustics. It's very important to do it right, because you're going to have, you know, speakers, amplifiers, projectors, a lot of screens, and you know, all of these are going to parallelly run in the restaurant. So it's very important to then bring the right acoustic consultant here.
All right. Thank you so much, Shilpa, for such an amazing conversation. I mean, I learned so much myself about this. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for joining us here. It was a lovely and fun-filled conversation today. Thank you, Shilpa.
Thank you. Thank you, Utsav. It was a pleasure being here. And I'm hoping that people gathered something, and some of the students who were also participating in the competition were here too. So all the best to them.
Yeah, guys. I mean, I don't have anything to say. I love this conversation. I think we should plan another conversation separately apart from the competition, talking sure. specifically about restaurant spaces. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.